Burka, and I welcome you cordially to my podcast, Neue Musik Leben. I have studied classical singing and music, and nowadays, and since many years, I have been singing lots of contemporary experimental music and also do performance. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekurka.de. And I also welcome you to subscribe to my monthly newsletter. In this podcast, I talk about themes all around contemporary music. I share with you the behind the scenes, the insider knowledge, and I'm happy to bring you the human beings out of this new music world closer. I'm cooperating with the NMZ Neue Musik Zeitung. And today I have a wonderful guest for you, the composer Anna Sokolowicz.
Hello, Anna. Anna Sokolowicz. I cordially welcome you into my podcast today.
Thank you, Rene.
And I'm really, really excited because, I mean, technique makes anything possible. You are in Montreal in Canada, in the French part. And yeah, I'm sitting in Düsseldorf, Germany, which you also know. And what I also like is that we have a common friend and colleague, Snežana Nesič. And yeah, let's talk about you now. And I would like to know at first, how did you find your way into new and experimental music?
This is very interesting and fundamental question. And I think about it very often because the road is not that simple. And at the same time, it was very natural in my case. I started to do music in a music school when I was about 8. And I liked from the beginning to experiment and to improvise on the piano. I just want to mention that just before that, 4 years prior to starting to do music, I did the classical ballet lessons. And during that time, during the pauses, I went to improvise on the piano because we were always accompanied with the real pianists during our lessons. And this discovery of the piano, we didn't have the piano at the time, was for me extremely important. So I improvised, I composed my first piece, et cetera, et cetera. And eventually my parents bought a piano and I started to do piano lessons. And I understood that I was improvising a lot and that actually it was not necessarily the case with all piano students or all musical students. I thought that it was natural for everybody. So I actually composed all my life thinking this is the way to do. And I liked very much music, all kind of music, of course, especially, of course, classical music, and with my friends, pop and rock music. But I rarely wanted to perform it as it was written, especially the very boring etudes, studies for piano. We were always, repeating and repeating for exercise to do our technique. And then what I did actually is that I changed them. Instead of playing them in major key, I played them in minor key. And after, when I discovered some other modes, I played it in, the same exercise in Phrygian mode or other modes, et cetera, et cetera. So I just explored, and I didn't want to play necessarily the piece in their original. So I think that everything started from that point. And eventually my teacher, piano teacher, proposed me to do some contemporary music, which was actually imposed in some competitions when I went as a piano student. Then I put all my time to practice these contemporary pieces. And all this together brought actually to the point where my piano teacher said to my parents, I think she's a composer. And it was very interesting from the beginning, because of course I thought that everyone was doing the same as me.
That's really interesting. And if you tell me that you also liked improvising, is that also part of your composition technique now, or do you really put it down precisely, or how do you work with your musicians?
Yeah, this is very interesting. I like to improvise myself, of course, and I got a lot of musical ideas from improvisations, although there are many musical ideas which I got from some other in other ways, and other I had triggers in another way which are not necessarily improvisation, but I like to use improvisation myself for triggering my ideas and imagination. But I don't use improvisation in my pieces. That means that I don't really have places where I put musicians to improvise, which will maybe change in the future. But up to now, it was the only reason was that I knew exactly what I wanted in my pieces, and in that way, you cannot allow someone to improvise if you exactly know which rhythm and which pitches you want to use.
Mm. And you also mentioned that you did ballet. Do you think that also has an influence on how you compose or approach music?
Absolutely. Doing the ballet, doing music, and a little bit later starting to do the theater. Theater in several senses as a young actress, but also as a young stage director or costume designer or music composer or even light designer, etc. Everything which you can imagine in the in at that age this kind of troupes, children's amateur theaters. I actually made my artistic statements, if I can say, or points of view, which are all around the stage, but from different points of view. So stage as a performer, piano performer, where is nothing to see and we're just playing abstract music, until very concrete movements and words which have very clear semantic meaning. So all this together actually made my personality, my artistic personality. And actually, when I'm composing, I don't think in one way or another way as a musical composer or as a, I don't know, as a writer or as a choreographer. For me, it's the same. I very often think about movement. I'm a very visual person, and I'm very much inspired by movements and by colors. I have also this neurological situation where I see in colors, so that I have this ability. Or sometimes it's not an ability, sometimes it could be a burden, but anyhow, this synesthesia visual. And so this is also guiding me a lot. So I don't have a perfect pitch, but I can remember pitches by the colors. So this is quite interesting. And the combination of chords and the combination of several pitches together give me colors, and I remember by colors more than I remember by their actual pitches. So this is how I create. And I actually don't like to think about who is triggering some things, because I just leave myself very often in this situation, and I just follow actually this artistic intuition. Although I very often give to myself very specific triggers, because I think it's very good for a composer to also use a lot of brain. So this combination between our instinct and our brain, for me, the keys to feeling comfortable actually in composition and feeling free somehow.
Yeah, that's amazing that you are in a way so multi-talented and you got to learn all of those things. It reminds me in something where I actually was jealous. I went to do my bachelor at Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. And there was the Meadows School of the Arts, and I was in music and studying voice, and there was the theater department. And the theater department was very different than our department and also our opera productions. When we did an opera production, there was one a year, and well, we got cast and you had your role and you showed up, and it was totally different in the theater department. Even though they all came there to study acting, they had to do everything. So if they had much more productions, I think they had like 5 each term. And if they were not cast, they were doing costumes, lighting, directing, assisting, whatever there is. And so they were always busy and also got to know stage from any angle. And I always thought, why aren't we doing such a thing? I think it would also be great to really understand what's going on. And the other thing what happened was in this department with the acting people, by doing all of that, they figured out what they really wanted, because some of them then realized, want to be an actor? I'd rather be the director, or I do the costumes. And so I thought this was amazing, and it just reminds me in that. And the other thing is, when I studied at UBC in Canada, the voice teacher who got me there, and she also was then the head of voice, I knew her very long because she was an opera singer in Nuremberg, where I grew up in Germany, and I admired her. And back then she never would teach. She's like, I'm too busy singing. But we were always in touch. And as soon as she went back to Canada, she's Canadian, and she had this position and she knew I finished my bachelor, she's like, why don't you come up to Vancouver and study with me? And I'm like, cool, I come. And she is the most amazing person, because she can do the whole opera by herself. She also sew costumes. She could sing. And I'm like, what is that? And she even then directed, I think, a few times an opera at the Vancouver Opera. And I'm like, okay, there are obviously talents out there. But I still think, even if you maybe are not talented in some areas, I would have wished we had that same program like those acting people.
This is exactly why I like opera. When I discovered that opera could have all my loves put them together. But really, opera, in the sense initial of the term, of the piece of art together, of the expression in your personal way of, through a human voice, of something, of a story, telling a story in that way. And that's exactly what you are talking about, what I try to do in my teaching, because I'm teaching at the university, Université de Montréal, French University at Montreal. And it's exactly the kind of seminars I do, interdisciplinary seminars, where I put together students from composer, singer, and other instrumentalist, together with playwriters from National Theatre School, and also dancers from dance school, and also choreographer, some professional choreographer and dancers, and also even people from cinema. And we are improvising sometimes during several weeks, a whole semester or a year, sometimes during just 2 weeks. We have intensive courses, and then bring everyone in the countryside, and then we do and explore and eat together and talk about projects and have opera a day. We are writing a little short operas a day with certain thematics, but where we explore job of others, we have to be, everyone has to be in the space, everyone has to be everything, and to try everything. And of course, this is the way where we can discover that we are attracted by, I don't know, we are a singer, we have a singer, and now she wants to become a director because she discovered that she has these skills and this kind of imagination. And so this is the way where by trying things, you could be attracted. And as you know, in opera, nobody comes in opera in a straight line. There is nobody like costume designers or even composers who will be young and say, oh, one day I'm going to be opera composer. It always happens by chance for everybody, you know, for people who are doing staging, it's by chance that start to do operas and then they fall in love and then they continue to do opera. And it's same with all other jobs around opera. So that's why I think it's very important to give this opportunity to the students, and but mostly of everything to tell them to trust to their guts and to trust to their feelings what they want, and to try to show what they think that they can show to others. Because having a preconception, following the preconceptive ideas about what is opera, and having with all respect, but having one kind of romantic operas in our heads will not lead with us to express ourselves in how we feel. Mm-hmm. Because what is for me, I mean, I always come back to it's always anthropological research. It's always coming back to the first operas. I always think about, I mean, how this genius piece of Orfeo, Monteverdi, he is a piece so personal and in the same time universal in its expression of these complex emotions and feelings. Yeah. There is everything. Everything is there. Okay, there is a sorrow. There is a deep sorrow, and there is the all subtleties which are around us, and there is a pure joy, and everything in between you can find in that opera. And this is what fascinates me, is our own possibility in operas to express and to find what we are searching for, and to don't think about preconceived structures, but to think today what we can do. Mm-hmm. Because for me, opera is so connected to its time. And it's a need to express yourself by vocal expression, and to tell something you have to say, the story which is narrative or less narrative, by using all the technologies and all the knowledges, artistic and technologic, of your time. So that's it. And if you say this to today's young people, forget about other composers, how you can express yourself through a human voice and what you will tell us, and why this text has to be sung, why you have to sing. So all these very simple questions I ask to my students, and we have a lot of pleasure experimenting around this.
So they do mostly study like music theory with you, or do they also have composition for other instruments as well?
I mean, for these projects, they are doing together these little projects, but many of the projects continue to work after. So some of these groups and some people who meet there, they continue to work on projects after that. This is one of the projects, but some other project includes technology. We're doing this research with the projects with pocket operas, which started as a seminar and actually became 3 years program with augmented reality and virtual reality. So we have a beautiful occasion. We had several grants, and I'm the chairholder of the research creation in opera. which is a government position at the university, and I'm very lucky to have this position and to have these beautiful grants and to have this beautiful technology I have, and where our students actually can experiment. So we are finishing our four operas of 15 minutes operas with using this technology and with virtual reality and augmented reality. The main goal for this was to democratize opera, to be available, to come to our homes without any restrictions. And the only thing, the people who will see them will need their tablet or their phones, intelligent. They don't need to have any headsets or any other things in order to see these operas. So this is one step in that direction.
Wow, you did really exciting things there. So I guess if somebody wants to study with you, they will find you. We put that into the show notes.
Yeah, with great pleasure. We have a place.
Cool. And what also came to my mind is when I work with so many composers myself, and when they do opera, or oftentimes when they whatever do the first one or two operas, sometimes they're not happy, because the thing is, you know, they get asked to do the opera, and then there's, as you said, the librettist and the director, and it's not always that it matches. And sometimes they are happy that they've done whatever the first opera, but they're not happy with the outcome. And what then also sometimes happens, I mean, sometimes whatever you find your people, that's also a good thing, that you know, okay, if I work with those, my ideas come across. Or some of them, whatever, have them a team, like Helmut Oehring, he always travels with his people. Or people really, especially maybe when they're as talented as you, they start doing a lot of the things themselves because they're not happy. And it always makes me think, because I'm also a big fan of music theater, and then I wonder why it is so difficult to really put it together that especially also the composer is satisfied, and not that he feels then, oh my God, the librettist always wanted something else, and that's not me anymore, but now I'm stuck with this project, and what is the director doing here? And and so I guess if you can approach it like you do it, I mean, maybe hopefully the chances are higher that whatever comes out is really your art.
Yeah, but you know, this example of working together, this co-creation, it's really to explore different and to bring to the, I don't know, to playwriters, the idea that it exists operas and there is music as well, et cetera, which is much more obvious in Europe, you know, especially in Germany. But here in Canada, you can have professional playwriters who never went to opera. You know, it's possible. There is like different kind of education, et cetera, et cetera. So all this is more to make people know what's happening and to experiment things. But on the level, professional level, it is you're absolutely right. And this is, I find, difficult for composers who never did anything else by composing. I mean, who never did theater and dance and some other things which I did, because I think that I was so privileged that I had this very strong opinion on what it should be, that it liberated me in a way that I really knew what I wanted to do. But young composers or composers who never had any other artistic practic experience, it could be very difficult for them. So that's why I also I'm teaching this course, and I like to talk with, of course, with students. And I will tell you that it's really not easy. I worked on very, very interesting, important commission, and I abandoned because I didn't, it was not my way of working with the librettist. Although I liked him very much and he's a great friend, but it just didn't work. The problem is also the opera companies. You know, 20th century was not the century of opera. I'm talking about a big opera production. There is a lot of chamber operas and a few main stage productions. But you know, with the film which arrived at the beginning of 20th century, it somehow became a Gesamtkunstwerk somehow, you know. And then what happened with the opera? Actually, opera houses, they continued to do old productions. And they didn't really commission. So what happened is that librettist as a job didn't exist anymore in the way it was before, you know. So the opera houses, they actually forgot how we work. And they forgot that if they choose a composer, that this is the composer who should choose the librettist and think what is for that composer important to put into libretto. You are not following something you cannot follow, because if it's not in your blood, if this story is not the kind of story you want to say, it doesn't work. It has to be aesthetically your expression. And then if it's not, that it doesn't work. I heard so many examples of great opera houses, and they say, oh, we will do great opera. We will hire beautiful playwright or librettist. But it's much, much more dangerous playwright than librettist. And then they put with a beautiful composer and a beautiful stage director and beautiful costume and da-da-da and great singers. But it doesn't work, because it doesn't work that way. We have to start from the composer, or if we start from the libretto, we have to be sure that the composer who will be chosen for this libretto is aesthetically and in each sense connected to this story. So I did work with a librettist, but I also a lot worked alone, just because I understood that it was easier for me. And I'm not a libretto, I don't write text. I gather, I'm very good in gathering, and I'm good for dramatically constructing the opera. But I'm not a writer, so I struggle very often. And I sometimes commission a text, very specific text, to a writer for my operas, and I use them. But yes, you're absolutely right. And I think that the people who are commissioning and who are doing the production, they should understand what is the road to the successful opera. Because if composer is not in his or her element completely, it's not going to work.
Interesting, challenging. It's always great when it works out. And I mean, since we're talking about opera, we're talking also about voice, and you compose a lot for the voice. How is that for you? Because some composers are also a little bit afraid of writing for the voice, and for you, it's very natural.
Yes, but actually, you know what is very interesting? I was never attracted with the voice before I got the commissions. And actually, when I was younger, when I was this very experimental young composer, which improvised a lot on piano, actually, I didn't like voice. I like pop and rock singer. I didn't like, you know, leads and all this stuff. And I didn't like vibrato. All the time I liked Baroque music, you know, but I didn't like, you know, the huge voices, etc. Now I adore them, you know, but at the time I was not attracted, etc. So when I composed just for my friends, and I, of course, for your colleagues at the university, etc., etc. And I composed the vocal pieces just because it was in Serbia obligation to write for voice from the beginning. But in Canada, even if you are a student, if you don't want to write for voice, you don't write for voice. So it was quite interesting. I wrote what it was mandatory when I was living in Serbia. And then after that, in Canada, I didn't write for voice at all. And then I had my first commission. As any other commission, I started to be to have professional commissions. And I had a commission for voice, and I said, okay, why not? Let's do it. Let's as any other piece. And then I discovered something happened. And actually, after my very short 3 minutes piece, I had a commission for 10 minutes piece by this Queen of Puddings Music Theatre Company from Toronto, with whom I have great had great relationship. They are closed now, but they had, so my second commission actually professional was for them. And after that piece, they commissioned me the opera, my first opera, chamber opera. And when I was starting to work on opera, when I was working on the opera, then I actually understood that all my loves are somehow together. All this knowledge and feeling for the stage, which I always missed a little bit with instrumental music, were there. I understood, even when I was writing before that, pure instrumental music, I always imagined, my dramaturgy was always done with all these, the knowledges I know, which was part of myself. But in this case, when I was really working for the stage, all this made complete sense. And it just opened a beautiful door, which I hope will never close.
It sounds like it. It's really cool. The other thing that just came through my mind, because you also mentioned, you know, that you like the singers who are more the Baroque style, and then you discovered also the whatever heavier voices that can also be very beautiful, is, and I often don't know how much composers or composing, whatever, professor, teachers talk about it. We have this thing in opera, especially with the Fach, that you have whatever, a soubrette or a lyric soprano or a dramatic soprano, and the same with all the male voices and so on. And I think it would be important that composers know about that, because it's not just about, okay, what range has this person I'm writing for, or can she do certain things, or what about extended techniques? But the thing is, if I know that and I know, okay, I want a voice that is very straight or very has little vibrato, then I should also write in that sense and also know, okay, I can have that. That's maybe more the lyric or the Baroque singing, whatever soprano, but she will never have the volume to whatever sing over in Strauss orchestra or something. But if I really want to have the woo, then I know maybe she won't be as flexible, or she will have more vibrato in the voice, and that I really make conscious choices. And do you also think about that, or you also teach that, and are the students aware of those things?
So I don't teach this, and I think it's very often I'm not a specialist in voice, okay, and I'm not specialist in opera in a way that I'm not a musicologist. You know, I know of the operas, of course, and I know the things which interest me, but I don't, you know, the roles, you know, how the melomanes, they know, oh, he played this role of, I don't know, Mimi, and of course they're Mimi, it's very important, but there's so many roles I don't remember by heart, you know, and I'm not in it in that sense. What I'm interested in is in the structure and in expressions, et cetera, et cetera. So I invite very often people to talk to my students. I think it's very important to know that there are different types, but please listen. And you can even say, okay, I want this kind of sound, or I want this kind of sound. What I also believe in is that we can be inspired to write if we know who is the singer. I think this is the most important. If we can know singer from the beginning, in some specific commissions, which are not necessarily operatic, sometimes it could be a lead or some piece, you know, with the ensemble and voice, and then you know who is the what is the voice, and then you adapt. I think that we are all composers. I'm completely open to everything, and I just like to be inspired by the voice. And of course, there are different kinds of sopranos, but you can have the same kind of soprano, like in same category, but the voices are not the same, you know? They're like, I know so many great singers who are like, I'm not sure if she's soprano or mezzo. I don't know, she has a color of, she's like a high mezzo, but she has a beautiful low, but then she has a good high, and she has three octaves range, and I don't know where to put her. But, you know, there's so many voices which are not where they should be, you know, and then you have to adapt to this voice. And we know Mozart did the same, how many versions he had of some roles in Don Giovanni, because there were some different singers. So this is how it goes, and we are inspired by different singers, and we actually want to do this. Some roles sometimes ask a specific voice in our heads, but I'm so flexible, and I just it just has to be close to my imagination. I just hear something, and then I like to be surprised, actually.
That's great that you acknowledge us and are open, because as you said, each of us is so different. And even though maybe some things a colleague can do really well, it doesn't mean that I can do it. And vice versa, there may be things I do in an amazing way and some other people are like, I don't know how to do that. And I think the thing with the range, I'm not sure if it's through doing contemporary music or if people with bigger ranges are drawn to contemporary music, because I often find out, I mean, I also have a very big range, that people who do contemporary music somehow have that. And I also like jumping around between whatever really low and really high. And that's just fun for me. And I also like that in the contemporary music, I can show all of that, that especially there, even though we have this Fach system in opera, you're out of your box. And like, I mean, I have been basically kind of a lyric soprano. And when I was younger, it was more the light lyric. And the thing is if you're a light lyric soprano, you always get those, whatever, the nice roles, you're the friend, the princess and all that. And for me, it was just boring. I also wanted to maybe one time play the witch or something. And that also helped me in being contemporary music, because there are no boxes. So I have been dying then, and also do other wild things, and to really explore the whole range of voice and maybe also of emotions. And I think with the Fach, I mean, then there are people who always are the funny ones, and they might also get bored of that, or the ones who are always evil. And I'm like, I want to play all and not just one thing.
Exactly. So we should work together.
Yes. And you came from Serbia to Montreal. Can you say anything about like the differences about how music is approached or how the music world is, or what do you like especially in Montreal?
It's very interesting, you know, arriving in Montreal, I just understood how Serbia and music education and artistic education is actually Europe, how with little differences, actually it's European. It stays in the philosophy, in the way of behaving, even mentalities which are different from one country to another. In Europe, you sit together very, very close when you compare to North America. So what I found actually in North America is, of course, beautiful people. Here in Canada, in Quebec, of course, I'm in love with Canadians, and of course, especially with Quebecers, because I'm living here since 32 years, is this openness, this simplicity of living. There is this incredible space. Country is so spacious. Just in Quebec, whole Europe can enter, you know. Huge space, physical, but also the people. There is something interesting. They don't have the same tradition as we have. Musical tradition, cultural tradition. And they doesn't mean that they don't have culture. They have, but it's not in the same way transmitted. And it's not, there's some structures which are not that structured. And this actually, what I understood here, that I I always mentioning this, before I came here, I considered myself as a as an avant-garde European composer, whatever that meant at the time. And then I arrived here and I started to work and started to understand actually the chance I had to live there, and I started to feel free. So all this avant-garde knowledge, I think I was in Europe, were actually somehow the chains. And I started here little by little to discover things which were actually recognized at the audience and at the critics as Slavic soul, Balkan origins, etc., etc., which at the beginning I considered as insulting, because I was avant-garde European composer, and then you tell me that I have this Balkan soul or Slavic soul, whatever, which was, you know, insulting at the beginning. And then I actually, by analyzing my music and talking with the audience, I understood that it was a huge compliment, actually, that I had something which is very rich. And actually, I discovered my Balkan roots from their eyes. And they actually discovered in myself something which I didn't know that exists and which was actually there. And this kind of Mediterranean how can I explain, carnivalesque sensations and artistic approach where you can feel opposed sensation at the same time, which is so characteristic for Balkans, but also Mediterranean world. You can find these opposed living sensations in Fellini films, for instance, even in Buñuel, which is not originally European, but with the spirit it is. And I don't know, with even though in the Balkans, Kusturica's films, etc., where you can have, love story, and there is a war around. So there is two sensations which are absolutely present at the same time. So this kind of, I can say, philosophy of emotions in music actually existed in my music. And this was recognized and something as something different. And actually I started to think about it and actually to raise it as a, something very interesting. And also starting to use some elements of Balkan traditional heritage, which is also musical. So this is not musical character, and but also musical, some elements which are very, very rich. And I just understood how lucky I am to coming from this part of the world where this Oriental Europe with all these absolutely crazy influences from all over the world, which comes from the Balkans and stayed there, left their elements, musical or cultural there. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's sometimes interesting when you go away and then you find your roots. And I mean, I studied in the United States and in Vancouver, Canada, and I also found that very freeing for me. And you, I mean, even though I returned to Germany, but it changes you. You
all,
I mean, there's a different approach, and obviously also like going back to North America. And I also have a few friends who also have been studying partially in the United States, and they also said they were composers that was freeing them, because even though sometimes maybe in Germany think, well, this is not really avant-garde, some of the stuff they're doing, but the great thing is what I experience in the States, or when I talk with people in New York, they're so open. They don't put things into boxes, and they don't care if there's, I don't know, rock music with avant-garde or who knows what. And I also find that very, very freeing. And I think we kind of, I mean, we're good at thinking and analyzing and all of that, but sometimes we also tend to put things into boxes here in Germany.
Not in Germany. I mean, this is the, you know, Europe, there's so many people in the small space. You know, and you have to survive, and there is a tradition, and it's huge, and you have to respond to it, you know. And here is different. It's space, especially in Canada. In the States, there are much, much more people than Canada. I mean, it's nothing, you know. I don't know what we are, 40 millions in the hugest country in the world, you know. So it's there is a space also for that, but also this tradition is not, you know, it's not something which is with chain you. So this is interesting that you can really, as you said, I can write a tonal piece and I will not feel bad, you know, which at my time in Europe at the beginning of 90s was impossible. If you want to recognize composer, you have to write as, etc. So this is something which is different. You're absolutely right. And being outside of your country made you realize much more what are your roots and who you are actually.
And when I hear what everything you're doing, composing, teaching and so on, how does a day in your life look like? Are you very structured? Are you going with the flow, or do you have routines? How can I imagine that?
Oh, everything. I'm very structured. I'm very well organized. Now, of course, my children are older, so it's much, much easier. They're autonomous. Of course, I will be always there for them, but they're more autonomous. So it gives me much more time in the day. And I also try to be to give me more space and to think about things and to allow me to doubt, which is very important for me, to allow me to have this time and to change ideas and to provoke myself and this playground, which I call composition, which place where I am alone with myself and when I really play as a child. This is so precious for me. And I really allowed me myself to go to all directions I want to go. I like to really jump over the hill and not knowing what is downstairs. And I like to use my imagination to survive. And I had to use it because I will really, it could finish badly. So that's how I see it. And organization is, I think that I'm leaving a much more space now for me, because of course, as I said, it was important for me to be with my children and to raise them, but it was important for me to compose, of course. And it was important for me also to be there for my students. So there are some periods which were maybe last 10 years or even more than that were very, very challenging. But I think now is probably the best part of my life, where I can really concentrate on my teaching and on my composing and giving to my students examples of my own experience, which could be different than theirs, but still offering them possibilities to try things which I had a chance to try and which they maybe don't have necessarily. So I don't know if it was really an answer to your question. Your question was more how I organize. It was a little bit broader.
No, it's perfectly fine. And I mean, it's just to get to know you. The one thing that also just came to my mind is, I mean, you have gone such a great way and you found your way and you're a woman. How is it in Canada being a woman composer? Is that something, or is it already very natural and nobody cares and you're really kind of equal?
I think Canada is 20 if not 30 years ahead of Europe on these questions. So when I arrived to Canada 32 years ago, it was a big thing, you know, to be women which are in each field of work and in composition as well. So it was very interesting. I arrived at that moment, and for me it was so interesting to see how the accent was not on composer but also on women composer. And now it's like, I think we don't talk about it necessarily. We're talking about some other social issues, about the diversity, etc., etc. But now I think that we, it was probably very important at this moment to push this, to realize that it's important that women composers exist, and that they just should be should have the same place as men. That's all what we want, nothing more. Just to be we always remember Alma Mahler, huh? We always remember Gustav's attitude concerning Alma's composition. So, you know, it's always really pain for us as a woman composer to hear about that. So this is just normal and comfortable to just being able to do your job and to do. So I hope that in Europe it will become also completely normal and equal.
I think we're moving there, but I also often had the feeling that you're ahead of us. Or also when I was studying in the USA, they had back then already lots of like gender studies and gender majoring, and I don't know. And there was nothing back then here. So who was interested? They probably had to study somewhere else, but it changed, and that's good. And we also get going our way. Well, I really enjoy talking to you, but we are at our last question, and I would like to know from you, which tip would you like to give young artists?
To open their ears, to open their eyes, to question themselves, to doubt, allow them to doubt, but to choose the things they know they should do by following both their heart and their brain. This combination is very important in order to know what we know, in which sense we should go, which path we should go on, and we can change, but we know very well, so we should go where we think that we should go. And never be afraid, even if it's completely impossible at the beginning. If we feel this is the way we should do, we should go there.
Well, great. Thank you so much that we could meet today and have this great talk together.
Thank you, Irene. Hope to see you again. Ciao.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you. And please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.